Hello, this is Victoria Barella here on the show floor. Last day of ISE 2016 in Amsterdam. 2017 in Amsterdam. Forgot which year it was.
Okay, because last time I got interviewed, I spelled our company name wrong in the end for the .com, and I'm like, oh no, I don't even know how to spell my company.
So we're speaking with MiraView, Robert Bishop. Hello.
Hi.
Hey. So you were telling us an interesting experience in the very beginning of the show. Oh my gosh! Can you just tell us again what that was?
Well, we set up our booth and had everything working lovely the night before the show opened, and then when we came the next morning, about a half an hour before the show opened, we found that sometime during the afternoon of the prior day through the night, either one of those forklift things or a big carpet machine had actually run into the booth, knocked everything over, pushed the booth back, and destroyed a bunch of stuff.
What a wonderful start.
Yes. So I kind of felt like an idiot because when people came up for the first hour and a half, I wasn't ready to show.
Right.
But what they're thinking is, oh, this stuff doesn't work.
Oh, my God.
So it was really, it wasn't my best time.
I'm sorry that you had to go through that experience.
That's
but
okay,
other
but
than
ever
that bump.
Since that moment, we've been inundated in the booth. Today is light for sure, but I went back to back and I'm really, really excited for the reception because now we're shipping. Before we showed at Cedia, you came by, and that went well, but we were demonstrating we weren't shipping. So right. We love this show because we're shipping.
Good.
Have to say we're shipping soon. I can say, hey, we're shipping now.
We're actually shipping, yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
So we also have Sarah here.
Hi, this is Sarah Abrams, editor of Rave Publications.
We're walking around the show floor, getting our few hours in and running around. How are you, other than the bump? I'm very excited that you're actually shipping this year. Tell us a little bit more about actually your products. Tell me about it.
All right, so I'll just tell you what I tell people when they come up. Video distribution is not new. It first started with the matrix switches. So HDMI matrix switches use a technology, HD-based T, to send you put all your sources in a central location and then using Cat 6 or Cat 5 cabling to the TV, and you have the little balance on the back of the TV, and then it goes HDMI to the TV, and that stuff works. It's expensive and it's fixed, so you have like 8x8, 8 sources, 8 TVs. And so if you have less sources or less TVs or more TVs and less sources, it's not like a network. The IP guys came on the market a little after that, and there's two classes of IP products, IP video distribution. There's the what I call the light compression guys, like at Lona, just at Power, Wirestorm, usually using some form of JPEG technology where they take the video and then send it over the wire. The nice part about that is it's fast. The negative that I see is that it's so expensive on the wire. So these JPEG-like technologies would take a Blu-ray signal coming out 25 megabit and blow it up to like 150 megabit on the wire, so that you need gigabit infrastructure, layer 2, layer 3 switch, VLAN, all this programming to have it work. So that's a negative because you have to be like an IT guy. On the other camp, you got the guys who are doing full compression, not light compression. That's us. So they're usually H.264. And the good news about H.264 is the picture's better. As it blows up, you don't get the artifacting that you do with the JPEG technology. It's lighter on the wire, so instead of 150 megabit, it's 15 megabit, which is 1/10 the size. Yep. So you can run on anything. The negative typically with the encoder guys, the H.264 guys, is that it's slow because you're encoding really full compression and then decoding on the other side. And so I see products on the market here in this show where they have like 350 milliseconds of latency, or 500 milliseconds, 1 second, 2 seconds, even 3 seconds of latency. That's the delay it takes for them to get from point A to point B. Our system, our 1080p, our latency for 1080p is 60 milliseconds, and our latency for 1080i is 100 milliseconds. So even at our slowest, you would never perceive it operating with a remote. You'd hit the down, 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 and it would stay right with you. So we built the technology, and we thought, okay, what are we going to do with this? Because it's pretty cool.
How did you achieve that?
Oh, we had to do a lot of writing. We had to take the right kinds of chips and then rewrite firmware to make it better. And that's not an easy thing to do. But once we had it working, we said, okay, what are we going to do? The IP industry uses a transmitter connected to a source and a separate box, a receiver connected to a TV, and then networking cabling and a switch. And we thought, we're not going to do that. We're going to put both the transmitter and the receiver in one box. So it's a transceiver. So our little box will simultaneously encode and decode a stream, which is how we're wiring up this first example here in our booth. We have an encoded stream from a media player, and we're decoding the stream from another source. Over here in our booth, we're showing the traditional, well, if you had sources racked up, each would have a box, and then out in the office. This is just the same box, but it's only encoding, okay? It's transmitting. And then we have this other box here, which is connected to a panel, a TV, and it's just decoding. So this is the typical way, two boxes.
You still have a transceiver and a transmitter, but they're in one box.
That's right. So
it's less SKUs.
You can use both at the same time, or you can use one function or the other. So if you want to centralize your sources, you can still use our product to do that, because the cost of our product is less than anybody's transmitter or receiver. But if you're using two functions, it's less than half.
Yeah.
So it becomes economically a really cool thing. We're also demonstrating that because our signal is low bandwidth, we can actually distribute over very low infrastructure. So we're running on a Netgear 10100 switch here, which there's not a product in this show that's running on a 10100 switch, I promise you. So that's different about us, that we have a transceiver 2-in-1. It's also different that we run on low infrastructure. What's also different is that we run on different architectures. So we're showing Ethernet here, but we also have a card that does coax that slides into our box and locks in, and then you can distribute over coax. And if you don't have a cable, we have wireless built into the box, so you can distribute wirelessly both ways at the same time, because it's not a heavy stream. If you have a light stream, you can do all these really cool things. That's different than anybody else. Another thing that's different than anybody else is that everybody else requires some kind of fancy switch that's been programmed to control them, or some control system to control them, and we don't. We have control built into it. Now, we can support controllers telling us when to switch. That's nice. But all I have to do is take this remote that we provide, or you can use the CEC from the manufacturer's TV remote, and you just point it at the box and it pops up an on-screen display giving you a list of your sources. And so you can see in this example we have two sources, two little monitors, and we have a third option, which is an IP camera. The Blu-ray is being encoded in this box here, and I just called that source Blu-ray in the configuration. That's what comes up in the list. The media player is being encoded in this other box, and I just called it media player. The front door, which is an IP camera, in the configuration it says, do you have any network streams? And I said, yeah, I have one, and it's called front door, and it's 10.1.1.60. So I gave it its IP address, and so if I select the front door, then what it does is it goes to the camera and says, give me your stream, and then it starts displaying it. So now you're seeing the camera running on the monitor. This is a source that's coming into us that's going through none of our equipment. It's an encoded IP stream, and then we decode it over here, and we support all these different codecs to do that.
Like a whole lot of magic, by the way.
Okay, thanks. We call it the Swiss Army knife because it does everything. Another thing that we do that no one does, obviously we're switching, I showed you that, but if you have your Blu-ray in another room, how are you going to control it? How are you going to turn it on or off or play or pause or whatever? And what happens in our system is that whatever the currently displayed source is, if you use a remote and point it at the box or the IR receiver on the box, it will forward that IR to the box that's connected to that source. Yeah, it's really cool. So here I push pause on the thing. You see it just paused immediately. It went IR to the box, IP to the switch, IP to the other box that's connected to the Blu-ray player, out the IR out port, and flashed the Blu-ray.
That was pretty fast too.
Well, yeah,
it's... You can't see it in the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Here's another thing. I'll take this second monitor and I will switch it to the Blu-ray player. So now it comes up with messages saying, you're sharing with this TV, you're sharing with that TV. That's a nice feature. To know that somebody tuned to your thing. Where it's really nice is if I DVR, I'm in my house or my office, and I put pause and I walk off and I come back, somebody changed my channel and now I've lost my pause. And it's nice that someone knows that somebody else is connected.
Right.
I have a little boy and I was watching an action movie and he tuned from the family room and it said, sharing with Family Room on my monitor. And so I paused it. I went out to my son. I said, son, this isn't for you. Let me put on this Apple TV. And he's like, okay, no problem. But had I not known that he tuned, he doesn't necessarily want to watch what I'm watching. He was just there. But I want to protect my boy from seeing stuff he shouldn't see. So I liked that.
You know, just explaining this, I didn't realize that, like with smart TVs, I was going to say, well, are they your competitors, like smart TVs? Like, why would someone choose your product over like getting a new smart TV? But then you get all these like cool little features and more that actually you wouldn't get in a smart TV, not that I've seen at least yet.
Well, smart TVs have their features, and I have a smart TV, but I also have a Blu-ray player, and that doesn't help me at all. And if I want to watch my Blu-ray player that's in another room, that doesn't help me at all either. Unless the smart TV people take our technology and put it in the TV, which we've been approached on, that would be so cool. I'd be in my home, and anything I plug into the TV is immediately available. Right. And because we can distribute wirelessly, can you imagine? Nobody had to do any cabling, and it just starts showing up. Oh, that'd be really cool. But we have to convince the TV guys to actually spend the money to do that, because, you know, for one penny, they'll cut you out. So, I mean, TV people, we love you. That's what I really meant to say. But what I was showing you here is now that I've got both of the monitors showing the Blu-ray feed that's been paused, the current source to this other box here is the Blu-ray, so I can control it over here, this or over here, because they're both watching it. So I can pause it here, unpause it over here, that's all pretty cool too.
Right, right.
All right, so besides being able to control ourselves,
I do have a question. Are there any handshaking restraints between devices? I know sometimes you can't.
Okay, so the encryption for over HDMI is HDCP. And in order to be future-proof, you better be at the 2.x level of HDCP, which we are. So we can support 1.x sources and displays and 2.x sources and displays. There are limitations that HDC puts upon us. For example, you can only have 32 views of one source. The 33rd view shouldn't connect. It's an arbitrary number. I don't know how they came up with 32. But they did. I wish it was 64, but it's 32. So those are limitations that HDCP brings to us. HDCP brings us a limitation saying if you start with us, you have to end with us. So I have to have a key on each side. I can't start with a protected Blu-ray player and sling it out to my tablet that's not protected with HDCP. They don't let you do that. I would love it if they would let you convert it in the middle to another protected format that would get it out to the tablet in a protected form, but they don't let you do that. Because they don't think of video distribution, they think of an HDMI cable.
Right, right.
Yeah, a lot of consumers found that out the hard way about 10 years ago when they didn't have HDCP compatible TVs or computers.
They had a source that only allowed one key use, and then you tried to distribute it with more than one key, and it said, no, I'm not going to let you do that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to fault them that they don't think the way that we think in terms of video distribution, but it would be nice if there were more than just an info@dcp.org that I could actually send an email to and say, hey, what'd you think about this?
Yeah.
All I get back is read your agreement.
Oh my gosh.
Very helpful, by the way. That is true. Okay, so what else is different? You saw how we brought this IP camera right into the switch and then displayed it on the monitor decoded it using our system, but you didn't need a box or an NVR. If you have a NAS drive on your network and it has a bunch of media on it, if you just throw a DLNA server on top of it, they're free. Like Plex is a DLNA server, it's free. You throw it on, point it to the media. The transceivers have DLNA built into them, which means I can take my phone or my tablet with a DLNA client and I can say this TV, this source, and it will just start streaming to our box.
Oh, cool.
Which, imagine in a corporate setting, you've got a lot of corporate media.
Yep.
Or I'm at a mall and I want to be serving up all this content that's on a server. All of that stuff could be done. But the end user case for it is that I'm in my house and I have media on my server and I want to access it. And so that's what I do. Another thing that's nice is, Apple and AirPlay. I loved it. You take your Apple phone and you just throw it to Apple TV, and I just thought that was so cool. So we built in some wireless display protocols so that people could cast. there's two kinds of casting. There's the casting that's like media casting, and then there's second screen casting where you can see on the TV what you're seeing on your phone or tablet. So the first thing that we built in was media casting. So there's a few protocols. Dial is one of them. It's the venture between YouTube, Netflix, and Hulu, which allows you, when you're running those apps on your device, you just push the cast button. We come up in the list of displays, you select it, and now all of a sudden you're casting, but it's not going through the device. It's just a control saying, okay, send it from the network, and the network gives it to the box, and the box starts displaying it. I like that. Soon we'll have an update to our firmware where we're putting in AirPlay emulation and Google Cast, which is taking over Miracast, and then you can have the second screen stuff. I would venture to say that there's not one of these IP video distribution systems that do anything other than just wired HDMI. That's what they do. And we do all of this other stuff. And then at the end of the day, since our cost is less than any one of their two components, it makes it way cheaper. We're pretty excited about our positioning. So
it sounds like a whole bunch of genius in the company. But how long did this take to actually put together? Like, how long is your company already?
We started in hotel in-room entertainment systems in 2010. And we were doing large systems, hundreds of rooms over really crappy infrastructures. I mean, you want a bad infrastructure going to a hotel. The stables in the cable, taps going the wrong way. I mean, it's terrible. And we were running beautifully, and we were winning evaluations with the brands. But then when we went to go actually do a deal, they said we were too small. You're too small of a company. I'm like, well, that was really sweet. There's no way that I can overcome you're too small. You know, I can't, like, well, I guess I could, like, rent fake offices and put a bunch of people in it and whatever. But no. So we decided I don't really like this market. So one of our buddies was a co-founder of Control 4, the CTO guy, Eric. And so he came over and we showed him what we were doing. And he said, I had no idea you guys could do this stuff. And if you tweaked it just a little bit, the integrator market would go nuts. And that's where we had the idea. So we created MirrorView in 2014. And we're playing with the idea for about 6 months. And then we started real development. And it took us 2 years to build this. But there's a lot of moving parts here with... Just the HDCP stuff alone is really complicated, but then you put on top of it that you want to be fast in your encoding and decoding, and you want to pass through IR, and you want to be controlled or control yourself, or it's just really, well, and then we ran a 9-month pre-release program where we had a few hundred boxes that were out there, and just to make sure that we weren't going to run into any kind of we don't want to make our customers beta test our product, as opposed to many products that I've beta tested as a customer. Have you ever bought a product? And I mean, I love Apple, but my freaking Apple TV, I have to pull out the power to it all the time and put it back in because it loses its brains. Well, there you go. Which is why in my house I run a hybrid system. I have my SAT receivers down in the basement, but my Apple TV and my Blu-ray I put up connected to the transceiver at the TV so that I can have access to it to put the disc in or to power it off. I don't run a control system. Naughty me. And I also run over these dumb Netgear 10-1, I have an 8-port.
Yeah, right there.
To run my 3 TVs and 5 sources. And it's a 10-100 switch. So I'm the guy who tests the very low infrastructure of our product. And then, of course, if you have a nice PoE switch.
Or your own beta tester.
Well, I am the guy testing the low stuff. And we have others, but that's, I call myself the low guy beta tester.
Well, I'm happy your company is doing very well, and I hope it's exploding at ISC. Not being run over, though, but just exploding.
Yes, that would be much nicer.
CDS should be very exciting for you this year, then.
Oh, thanks. So the only thing that people have said to us is, you've got all these features, but what about 4K? You know, because in the residential world, 4K, there's a lot of 4K panels. 4K does a great job of upscaling 1080p. But if you have a 4K source, okay, so we're not in that game. The light compression guys, the JPEG guys, it's really easy for them to do 4K because they just make a bigger JPEG, big deal. But for us, it's like you have to encode like a 4K stream, full compression. And in order to do that, you got to do that really H.265. And those hardware encoders are just barely coming on the market. So by the end of the year, we'll have our H.265 box. So our current box is 1080p 60 Dolby 5.1. That's what it sends around. And that's H.264. the new box will be an H.265 4K 422 10-bit color. Now, 10-bit color 422 is better than 444 8-bit color. Okay, so it's
you're talking a whole lot of specs. I'm like first year in the industry. I'm blown away by all of this. But it's cool.
It's cool.
I understand, but there's a lot of details.
You're right. We always specify, because people in all their specs, they just put 4K at 60 hertz and then stop with their specs. Oh, no, so you have to explain.
4K 60, 422, 30
hertz, 8 or 10-bit color, yeah.
And we support Dolby 5.1, Dolby 7.1, Dolby Atmos, DTS, and DTS HD. So it'll be bigger. But that one, it'll be a little bit more expensive. But its stream will be about 45 megabit, and it will be beautiful, which I won't recommend running on a 10100 switch, but it'll be beautiful. You won't need a 10 gig switch or anything like that, like, you know, other 4K stuff. It'll have two modes. It'll have the mode that we have right now, which is simultaneous encode decode. So for a new installation, it's great. But if you're bringing it into an existing installation, then H.265 and H.264, they don't talk to each other, even though it's only one number off. You think, oh, it's just one number, just one little number. So we have a second mode on the 4K box where it'll do simultaneous encode, where it'll spit out H.264 and H.265. So 1080p H.264, 4K H.265, and that way the older boxes and the older panels can pick it up. It'll be a downscaled. But the newer boxes can talk to 4K sources and 4K TVs in beautiful 4K. In the meantime, honestly, there's no real good 4K sources that I'm seeing out there. I don't see people clamoring.
Throwing shade.
TVs are great, and they upscale our stuff anyway. So, hey, no problem. You can throw 1080p to them, and it's beautiful. But the sources, they're streaming off streaming services.
Right.
Where the codec or the compression that they're using is not even as good as the 1080p stuff coming through. So it's actually better if you just took 1080p and let them upscale it than it is to take that 4K junk streaming. Can I say junk?
Yeah, you can say junk.
Okay, all right. So
I've said much worse.
I've said much worse?
We have.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I like that about you guys. I don't have a filter. I just tell you what I think. So, yeah, it's
unfiltered,
better.
Unfiltered but non-cursing.
Well, they're unfiltered but non-cursing. There you go. That's me. Yeah. I did, however, think a few cuss words when the booth got run over.
Oh my God.
Way more.
I did think it, but I held my composure, so I'm proud of myself.
Oh, sorry.
Well, thank you for coming by. I just wanted you to see this because, you know, I've talked with other people in your organization, Sarah, and I've never talked to you because people hear video over IP or videos, whatever.
So much.
But all the stuff that we're doing, people haven't seen before, and you'd never seen. So I'm interested in your thoughts. What, when you see this, what do you think?
Because
there's lots of IP products that are out there.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of IP products at this show, like that were sort of next level IP products for the AV market.
Uh-huh.
Yours is interesting. I went and saw a bunch of other ones. But obviously, it's more on the commercial side,
uh-huh.
And your product is more for residential.
Well, I hear you say that. I hear you say that, but because behind our product we have this open API, you can control it. It's got a lot of commercial application.
I could see, especially when you get the 4K ready, even though the residential customers are the ones asking for it, it's really more important to the commercial market. Like, you know, residential people think they want 4K, but they don't really know. I mean, half the people that buy TVs out there, they used to, you know, run SD video on their TVs at home and they didn't even realize it. So I don't think they're going to be able to tell a huge difference between 1080p and 4K, personally.
Well, do you remember when 3D came out?
Yeah.
Okay, the only reason you'd buy a 3D TV is to get a better 2D processor, because 3D was totally stupid.
Yeah.
That the manufacturer didn't even have to support it is still stupid.
I know.
But you got a better 2D processor. With 4K, you have great upscaling. As a TV, fantastic. As a source, it's not there yet. It will be there. There are sources. You get in the broadcast world, and you want to add a zero or two to the price of anything that you're doing there, yeah, you can buy that stuff. But that's not available for the normal commercial, light commercial, residential.
Yeah,
nobody could afford that.
I just think that, and maybe it's because we've worked way more in commercial than residential, that like for the consumer, being able to watch a movie or a TV show in higher resolution, like, yeah, that's kind of nice. But 4K opens up and higher resolutions opens up so much in the commercial market with collaboration and having multiple windows open.
Absolutely.
So I just, to me, there's a lot more innovation there that makes this interesting. And there has been a lot of difficulty putting high quality video, audio, any AV signal on any network,
right.
As you know very
yeah.
well. So I feel like at the show that we've finally seen a lot more stuff come out and like a culmination of all the networking type things.
If we all just had the money for that stuff, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot more than just seeing network ports on, you know, displays and things like that now.
Yeah.
So we've seen complete ecosystems come out. We've seen a lot more, at least early attempts on putting AV onto like lower cost switches and things like that. So it's really interesting. I've been learning a lot about networking at this show because I'm not an IT person.
Like most
people in the AV industry.
You
but
don't have to be an IT person for this. You just plug it in. And
packets and layers and
yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on to our show on the Trade Show Minute. That's a whole lot of information, and I hope your booth stays intact.
Yeah.
No, not
yet. Yeah, so just let me spell the company right this time. So you can go see us at www.miraview.com. That's MIRAV as in Victor, UE.com.
There you go. Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you.